Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
You're listening to Fiber Talk, that twice weekly podcast for people who stab ground cloth with needle and thread. Yes, one of those days. That's right.
I love it. So we went in 2 weeks from art to, to now we're just right out stabbing.
That's right. That's right. Yep. One of those days. Uh-huh.
Yeah. We're in our busy season at work, too. So we're in product launch season. So I'm all about the stabbing.
Yep. I got two magazines due in 2 weeks and three trips in a row. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yep. Lovely. So, okay. We're going to start out with something very cool. Vanna. Now, Vanna posted, we're recording Tuesday, and she posted just a short while ago, late Tuesday afternoon, so a short while, who cares when, she posted a picture of a flat fold finishing that she did of all 12 of the Santa's Village designs from Country Cottage Needlework. Wow.
Yeah, it's a great picture, too. I just love how it was photographed.
Yeah, wow. If that doesn't make you pick up a needle and thread and start stitching, nothing will. I don't know who did those, but they did them on what kind of a bluish gray, I don't know.
Yeah, I love the background fabric.
It's perfect. And I was telling Christine before we started, I have, I think, 6 of those charts. And a great big piece of cream-colored linen that I bought, because I was going to do them all on one. And I started and just really lost interest, moved on to other things, and never did them. And now there's no way, after seeing this, there's no way I would go back to that cream linen, because these are just spectacular. And the person who did them did the scroll ivy stuff underneath, and then did the candy cane stripe across the top, and then Vanna finished it with a red and white cord all the way around with a little tassel in the upper corner. It's just beautiful. It's just beautiful. Yeah. All 12 of
now,
them.
Now, you thought I was crazy because I wanted to do the Sarah Brazier on a dark fabric instead of the traditional cream. Mm-hmm. And here we are, the fabric that's very similar in color. And now you're saying, oh, doesn't that look lovely?
Well, it's pretty spectacular. Yep.
It is. It's a beautiful color. And I think the trim really, I think, is what makes it stand out, because the red and the white just pop right off of that blue.
Yeah. Yep.
So it just really kind of ties the whole thing together. So the finishing, that's one of the cases where the finishing really makes the piece extra special.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's if those were mine and that box came in 3 days, 2 days, it's the middle of summer here in the U.S., I'd put them out. Christmas, Christmas is 6 months away. I'd still put them out. Man, those are beautiful. Oh, and Vanna's finishing, of course, absolutely crisp all the way around. Oh, yeah. The Twisted Stitcher, again. Beautiful stuff. Yep.
Yeah, agreed.
So there you have it. If you have those charts, check out this photo. It'll change your attitude about them. And now it makes me want to go see if I can get the other ones I don't have. Because I need, I need more charts.
Well, you have to think of it differently. These are smalls, remember? So we're trying to add smalls that are challenge pieces to the repertoire, especially because you have traveling coming up. So these are things that you can take with you.
Right. Help me rationalize. Talk more. Help me. yep. So that was a highlight of the afternoon right there when that picture popped up on Instagram. Go, Vanna. Man. Woman is talented. Yep.
Yeah.
She sure is. So let's see. Anasazi Song, plugging away on that. Really enjoyed Carol Lake last week and talking with her. And the Anasazi Song is, oh, man, I really, really like it. And I'm down to the last two big areas, which is two big stripes up the side of Byzantine variegated, it's Threadworks thread three strands. You got to lay three strands on a Byzantine stitch, and then in the gaps you put a krinic, and it's little slow going because laying three threads on an angle all the time and getting it, you know, just the way I want it is a little tedious. But we're getting there. We're approaching the halfway point on the height, and I know once I get to the halfway point, I'll have a shot of adrenaline and be up a couple late nights getting it finished. So really looking forward to that. What a beautiful design. And then I am going to do the that song, so Spirit and Dream. I have those now, and I'm going to do them, but I'm thinking that one of them, I think I'm going to change the colors and do them all in blues and in blue. Yeah, all in blues.
I like that. I like that.
I think I am. I'm starting to see a blue layout on that that I think would be really nice. So, yeah, I think so. Stuff's addicting to me. I mean, needlepoint really is. I mean, I really have gotten addicted to samplers, but needlepoint, it's just always, when I go back to that, it's just like a comfort thing, you know?
It is. I think just there's some, the word that comes to mind, and maybe it's not the right word, is whimsy. And I think that the whimsicalness for me lies in the fibers themselves, because, you know, and maybe it's the small girl in me, because you've got all these metallics and iridescence and all of those things. So especially when you're working on a sampler that's a traditional historical piece, or even black work or something like that, where everything is very muted and respectable, and do you know what I mean? Like very highfalutin sort of elevated work, to be able to do something that's flashy and fun like that is, you know, you need balance. You need need a little bit of that. So yeah. I think there's a good, that's why I like kind of working on multiple projects at once, so that you can do some things that are very, very controlled and structured, and then other things that are unstructured, where you can just kind of go off and do your own thing. And, you know, and it depends on your mood. You know, sometimes you just need to stab cloth, and you need a project for that.
Yep.
Too,
yep.
You know?
Yep. Yep. Just need to stab cloth. There's a t-shirt in there somewhere, isn't there?
Maybe.
I think there is. I think there's a t-shirt in there. I stab cloth. One blood drop on the end of a needle. I think so. Yeah, I'm seeing it.
Is that going to be a Fiber Talk merch?
Fiber Talk merch. Yeah. We stab cloth. Yeah. Because you can see the needle. You can see the needle with a little, just a drop of blood hanging off the end.
Right,
yeah.
A little loop of thread.
Yep.
I don't know. It's a little edgy for you, Gary.
It is, but, you know, right today?
Not so much, right?
I'm okay with that. Yeah, I'm quite okay with that. Yep. So anyway, there. Yeah, having fun with that. That, just great designs. Carol Lakes, those are just great designs. And, I'm going to have to resist starting the next one because I got to get started on Sarah Brazier, but I'm going to have to resist, and it's going to be a dueling thing here. And yeah, I love them. It's fun. We've had on the list for some time now to talk about Pinterest. This is the downer part of the show. Yeah. But we've had on the list to talk about Pinterest, because some time ago, when we first started this thing, and it, at the end of every, whenever we have a Sunday guest on the page for the podcast, at the bottom is always links to all of their online things, their website, Facebook, Instagram, whatever it might be. And, you know, that's there to help. And if you haven't noticed them, scroll down, you'll find them. It's helpful. And I used to put Pinterest on there. And it was when we talked to Debbie Woodard of Painted Pony Designs some time ago now. And about that time, and we didn't talk about it on that show intentionally, but about that time, she had discovered that someone had taken all of her angels, and I don't know how many hundred of those there are, but had taken a majority of them at least, and charted them as cross-stitch and put them on Pinterest for, I think, for free. But even if they were for cheap, it doesn't matter. They basically stole her work, made it into cross-stitch charts, and made it available for next to nothing or free to anyone who wanted them. And at the time that we talked to her, she was going through a whole process trying to get Pinterest to pull them down and not getting much support and just basically fighting to, I mean, that's her revenue stream, you know, one of her revenue streams and a very popular long-lived revenue stream. And it had been stolen from her and Pinterest was allowing it to have a market. And she was fighting that at the time, and now I learned here the other day, continues to fight it. She's actually been forced to pay someone considerable money to monitor Pinterest for posts of her work so that she doesn't lose business. And of course, you know, if she's paying for that, you know who's going to pay for that.
Right, unfortunately.
Yeah, so those painted canvases or whatever it else she has, the price, you know, is going to go up. I mean, it's that's just business. And all because someone stole her work and people are willing to take that stolen work and instead of paying her. You know, that's the other side of that thing when people steal the work. And then others are more than willing to have unauthorized material, you know, whatever the product is, for cheap or free. Then you know, you just help the program, because if you're taking the stuff, then people will keep producing it. You know, whether it's fake shoes or fake purses or whatever it might be. And so anyway, that at that time, then I quit putting Pinterest links for our guests. I just thought, wait, we're not going to promote. The thing is so sad is Pinterest is a cool idea. You know, to go there and collect things that are of interest to you, it's a really cool idea.
Yeah, it is. It is. In some ways, it's annoying, though, because it seems like Google, the only time, you know, like if you want to get ideas for something, like even something like I want to see how to plan my garden, you know, 8 out of the 10 pictures are Pinterest, and then you get sucked into Pinterest and you can't get out.
Yes,
my critique of Pinterest, I don't like it.
That is very true. It's like reading a dictionary. Yeah, it never ends.
It is kind of, yeah.
Yeah. So I just quit doing that, and we haven't had a Pinterest link in some time. And then it was just a few months ago on Needlepoint Nation, Jane Wood posted something. And I'll just read a little bit of it because she said it was okay. Yesterday, and this was some time ago, yesterday I deleted two comments from folks recommending Pinterest as a good place to find stitches. It occurred to me I should explain why I did so. Because of copyright. Folks post stitch diagrams there they copied from books and stitch guides so other people can have them for free, thus robbing the authors. If an author can't make a little money from a stitch book or guide or class lesson plan, that author will stop making them, and then where will we be? Please don't, and this is Jane continuing, please don't use Pinterest and don't recommend that others do so. If you do so here in Needlepoint Nation, your comments will be removed, and I may get angry enough to put you on the naughty list. And I don't want to be on Jane Wood's naughty list. But you know, they just shut it down, and then in an exchange today, she said that at that time, she started tracking designs and stitch diagrams that were posted to Needlepoint Nation that were likely copyright violations. And since mid-May, she's had 18 that she knows that pretty sure are copyright violations. And then she said that Carol Lake has had all of her books posted on Pinterest.
Wow.
You know, that's just not good. That's just not good. And so it's, you know, it just, so that's why we don't do Pinterest. This is the only mention we've had of Pinterest in some time. It just is, stay away, be careful. You know, stay away, or be careful. I mean, if you want to use Pinterest because it's a good place to collect ideas, fine. But be careful when you start picking up charts and stitch diagrams and those things, because unless you are confident that they're free and clear, you're probably getting something that's been borrowed and borrowed in a negative way. You know, it's pay for your stuff. We've talked about this before. You know, pay for your charts, pay for your thread, pay for your books. And there's enough designers in all needle work types who provide free designs. I mean, you don't have to look very far or very hard at all, and you can put together more free designs than you can stitch in 10 years that designers are legitimately putting out there for you to stitch for whatever. I mean, they all do it. They have a little idea. They know it's probably not worth publishing, but it's a really neat idea. And here's a 4x4 or 5x5 needlepoint piece. Have it, stitch it, have fun with it. And I mean, Debbie Raleigh's had on her site for some time now, a design that if you just get on her mailing list, you can have it. And I got that several years ago. And it's just a beautiful design, stitched it and had it put into a little square jewelry box and gave it to our daughter-in-law. And this beautiful little thing. And, you know, here, Debbie, here, you can have my email address for that. And it worked out, you know, worked out real nice. There's just if you have to have it free for whatever reason, there's plenty of ways to get legitimate stuff free without taking items that have effectively or literally been stolen from others. And
right. And there's so many, even if you just Google, you can find them that way. But even things that aren't technically free, if you go back through Needlepoint Now, there's always things there. If you're in the EGA, they always have a stitch along that is, you know, goes from month to month. There's always ones like that that you can pick up. And dare I say, I'm going to suggest something that's going to be very avant-garde. You can go to the library.
Oh, no, not that. No, no, no.
So, and, you know, at this point, it probably would be kind of, you know, unusual because how long has it been since we've all been to the library? I mean, even just a few years ago, I lived in the library. And I grew up living in the library. It was my favorite place to be. But for arts and crafts especially, you know, you could plow through those books and there was, you know, patterns and, you know, clothing patterns I used to do or crafts and things like that. I didn't do much needlework things. I'm trying to think of what kinds of things I used to get out of books, like all kinds of just general, like Christmas crafts and things like that. But any public library, that section is going to be huge because it's just a popular thing for people to borrow books on. So if you go there, there will be tons and tons of books that have been published with patterns in them that you can take. So, you know, use that. Or even more creative, if you really want to be, you can interpret patterns from other things. So you could even take things like Fair Isle patterns from knitting and interpret them into cross stitch. You know, there are lots of ways to find things to stitch if you want them.
Yeah, if you want and don't want to pay. Yep. Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, in the embroidery world, Mary Corbett has done more than one article post about old embroidery books that are public domain. That and she's got links. Just go to her site and she has several links. You can download those as PDFs, print out the patterns, trace them, and stitch your little brains out. And no cost, you know?
Right. We've talked about if you're only using them for your own personal use, the adult coloring books, you can take patterns from that.
Yep.
You know, if it's just for your own personal use and it's embroidery, you know, cross stitch and needlepoint is a little more difficult because you start getting into charting, which, you know, takes a bit of time. But if it's just things that you're tracing and embroidering, you know, goodness gracious, there's tons of books that you could take patterns from.
Yes.
That, in fact, you know, we talked about this, that's how my grandmother, my very first stitching, literally, was coloring books for teeny tiny tots that my grandmother would trace onto muslin and tell me to stitch a running stitch around, like, a duck or a rabbit. Or something like that was literally the first, you know, needle and thread stabbing cloth. That was the first stabbing I did. at the tender age of three.
Oh my, violence right out of the gate.
Right? There you go. So, yeah, and that's exactly what she used to do. So, you know, she'd just take a magic marker and trace it and then just tell me, you know, stitch along the line. And that's what I did. And then, you know, she'd say, okay, well, here's what a blanket stitch looks like. So now stitch that along the line. And, but yeah, absolutely. You can do things like that.
Yep. So bottom line, if you're going to use Pinterest, be careful and do all of our designers and artists a favor and don't use their stolen work. You know, don't use stolen work from them. That's, you're not furthering the cause, and yeah, prices are going to go up. They just simply are.
You know, and when you look at it too, I mean, I'm all about, you know, especially, you know, having a child and being a single parent for a very, very long time. I'm always the one who is going to be admittedly nickel and diming everything and looking for where can I save, you know, a dollar here or there. And that would be the one thing that I would never do, because when you add up the cost of your entire project, you know, I will buy thread from somebody's stash. I'll buy fabric that nobody wants. But the design, when you add up the cost of the entire project, that chart is not going to be the biggest expense by far. And right. That's the one piece where that chart, a lot went into making that. And that person deserves, you know, compensation for what they've done. And to be a designer, you're not a millionaire. You're really not. So we owe it to the people who are providing us with that much joy. Think about, you know, how much do you pay for a movie? And that's 2 hours. And if somebody like Debbie Rowley or, you know, name your favorite designer, how many hours did it take you to stitch that piece? So how many hours of joy did that person give you? And divide it by the cost of the chart.
Yep. Chicken feed.
it really is. It really is. So if you think of it that way, the next time you go to, you know, copy something off Pinterest, you might think of it a little bit differently. And really they're doing us, you know, we should probably be paying them more.
Yes. Yeah, we probably should. You know, and this kind of stuff I'm personally particularly sensitive to, because when we were doing the aquarium hobby, I taught myself how to photograph shooting through glass and water, photograph fish and coral, and got fairly adept at it, and produced a lot of pictures to share with people and shared them online. And more than once, you know, someone would pick it up and use it for promotional purposes or something. And I'd hear, you know, somebody send me an email. Isn't this your photo? Yes, it is. And, you know, same kind of thing. And it really, oh man, it's just, it's like somebody invades your home. You know, you just wait, what are you doing? I took the time to learn this, practiced and practiced for hours, thousands and thousands of photos to get good ones. And somebody just picks it up and uses it like it's laying out there for everyone. And yeah. So anyway, all right, enough downer stuff. Just be careful. Just be careful on Pinterest. So we have to get in a plug here for our friend Krista Gramer from Just Stitching Along. Now, Krista was in the UK and Scotland on a vacation, posted several shots of a Rolling Stones concert, so apparently she's a big fan. She fell getting off of, if I recall this correctly, getting off a bus, and I think it was a double-decker bus. She fell and broke her leg in four places, the femur, the upper part, in four places, and messed up her knee. And went to a hospital in Scotland and had to have surgery, and I'm sure she's got more metal than bone. But she went through quite an ordeal. And this is Tuesday, and she's supposed to be coming home Thursday or Friday back to the States. And I'm sure that's going to be an ordeal with a leg that won't bend and can't bear any weight. And, you know, it's hard enough to fly overseas on a plane if you're feeling okay. So she's coming home, and Nicola and two other ladies, and I know I should have written down their names, but I didn't, all went and took time to go visit her and keep her company, and because that's got to be the most lonely feeling, to be in Scotland by yourself, and you can't do anything. You're in bed in the hospital. So I was thinking, now she has, that I know of, two charts. So when she gets back, you know, the inclination will be to send a card or flowers or a balloon or something. But I was thinking, what more fun than to, if you're at all interested in, she has two sampler charts, Lucy Calcutta and Gertrude's Garden. What would be more fun than if a whole bunch of people just bought a chart instead and put on the order, get well soon?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Something to do. But anyway.
To be honest, I mean, I'm not wishing a broken leg on anyone. And you know, my thoughts and sympathy goes out. But there's something that sounds appealing to be, you know, stuck in bed and the only thing you can do is stitch. I think it's just a matter of perspective, right?
Okay.
You can look at it as, all right, this is really unfortunate that I'm in pain and I can't do things. And, you know, because again, I'm coming out of this car accident and, you know, have lost a lot of, you know, have some neurological problems and all those things. But I'll tell you, there was a month there where, you know what, I can't do anything. And I can't stitch well even because my needle holding hands aren't working so well, but I can stitch on a small thread count, you know, I can stitch on 18 count linen.
Right.
So I can't really do much else. So I guess I have to do this and nobody can make me do anything else. So
yeah, you're not the first one who's made that statement. There've been more than one picture of someone. Well, I had foot surgery. Oh, darn. Here's a picture of me with my foot on a footrest. I have to stitch. What can I do?
I can't make you dinner because then I can't vacuum the floor because I can't walk on crutches. So I'm just going to sit here and stitch. So, you know, don't feel guilty about that is all I'm saying.
There's Krista's silver lining, but still, what an ugly ordeal. Yeah.
Sometimes you have to allow yourself to heal and not feel guilty about the time you're spending healing.
Yes. Yep, so there you have it. Krista, get home, get well, all those things. Last week we talked about buying DMC floss and cones?
Yes.
I think it was. And here just the other day they had, if you're on their mailing list, an announcement that they now have cones available. There's 2,279 yards, give or take an inch, on a cone. 22 colors. It's their standard six-strand floss. 22 colors available, full-blown cone. And, of course, that includes Ecru White and 5200, which, to me, those, certainly the white and the 5200, if you're going to buy them, those would be two to have. Mm-hmm. And $36 for a cone. You get it from the...
Okay, and are they the same, like the six-strand, same as what you would have?
Yep. That's what it says. Standard.
So in other
six...
words, if you haven't accidentally or, you know, not accidentally every time you go in the store, say, well, I can always use an extra one or two of white and now have 32 skeins of white. Not that I would have ever done that.
No. Yeah. Yeah. If you were to have done that, you don't need the cone. But if you didn't, this could be an excellent, excellent way to acquire thread that you will use eventually regardless. Yes.
Right. Or you know, say, well, it's a Joanne sale.
Right, yeah.
So...
Yeah, if you were to have taken that approach, if you were in the minority of stitchers who have taken that approach, then you don't need the cone. Right, yeah. For the people who just have a couple of skeins of white and maybe a couple of ecru, this could be a really valuable thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But... If you're sitting there with a small mountain of skeins, well, you know, whatever.
All right. So let me ask you this then. What's your thought on thread going bad? Because I know there was a conversation on one of the Facebook groups, it might have been Needlepoint Nation or I don't know, one of them, about buying used, well, not used, because if it's been used, then it's in a piece. But let's just say someone else's collection of threads. So let's say your grandmother acquires a rather large stash of DMC and has it for quite some time, and then she passes on and your aunt wants to pass it on to you. there was a whole debate on, yeah, that's a great idea, because the threads, you know, the numbers stay the same, so the color should be fairly true. And then the whole other side of the argument was that the colors will fade or the threads will weaken. And I think Mary Corbett had weighed in to say that to a degree the threads will lose some of their integrity. With something like white or ecru, you know, how do you feel about that? Because I was thinking about it. Here's kind of where I landed in my own head. If I were to be doing an embroidery piece or a needlepoint piece or something where I needed to know the exact number of the thread because I was then going to give that information to someone else who was going to stitch it, I would feel like I needed to have new threads and made sure that they were all the same dye lot, because then I would want to make sure that their result would be reproducible. But if I was just stitching something that was an embroidered surface embroidery piece or crewel work or something like that, where it was just for fun and something I was just doing off the cuff on my own, I wouldn't care if it was old thread, particularly or not, unless it was like 70 years old and starting to look like it was going to break. And then I would worry about the longevity of the piece that I was going to stitch. So that's kind of where I would draw the line. What do you think?
Well, I perk up whenever this question comes up. I perk up because I'm always curious about that very thing. I have never read or seen anyone say that if thread, well, let's just use DMC for discussion purposes, that if DMC thread, cotton thread, is kept dry and, or, you know, household dry, whatever that might be, and protected and not left out in the sun, that the longevity is, you know, I don't worry about it. And an example I have is when that stocking I did for Kevin took, I don't know how many colors. It was just a mountain of colors, and you didn't use all of it. And I have, so I still, I have several bobbins of DMC thread that is 30 years old, but it's been kept in. I bought a, it's a tackle box that I have. That, and I'm bobbins, and I keep it out of the light. I keep all my thread out of any direct sunlight all the time. Keep it covered. And I think nothing of using it, and I don't see it when I stitch. I don't feel like it's any less integrity or strength or shine or anything else than a new skein. So I don't give it a second thought. Now, if I were going to do something that would clearly take more thread than I had on a bobbin, then I would go buy new skeins just to make sure I had the dye lots matched up, because I would not kid myself that something 30 years old is unlikely to match something I bought now. But like you were describing, for something where I have plenty of thread and just need that color, I wouldn't think anything of it. And I've just never seen anyone say, oh, after 15 years, DMC thread starts to break down. I've just never seen anybody, you know, break down to the point where you can't use it. And if you have any question, you know, grab it from both ends and give it a tug. You'll be
That's
able
pretty much
to.
what I that's my kind of go-to is that. And I mean, I think I have clothing that's older than that. So,
I know I
you
do.
know, you know, we've been friends a long time. So I think I know some shirts of yours that are older than that. So, I don't think that there's an issue. I think things break down from sun. I think fading is probably the worst. And think about, I mean, think about, you know, conservators that do this for a living. You know, there are pieces of fabric, and my goodness, if you go through, you know, like royal clothing and costumery that is used in theaters and things like that, you know, you have things that are hundreds of years old and they're in fine shape, you know, and the things that tend to cause items of clothing or fabric to break down are usually things like body oil, sweat. So you'll have things like collars, cuffs. That's where you'll have issues. So sunlight, oxidation, things like that. The way you're describing storing threads, I would think that they would hold up fairly well. And I think to your point, you know, it's a matter of the color holding up. But if Again, if I'm stitching flowers and I'm not stitching flowers that have to match flowers anywhere else, Who cares if the color of this flower is slightly different, especially if I'm needle painting and I'm blending one thing into another anyway. The
Right,
whole
yeah.
point is they're all supposed to mishmash together.
Right.
So,
And I wouldn't, you know, and if silk, I wouldn't give silk a second thought if it was 100 years old. You know
No.
that, yeah. Some of the other, you know, some of the rayons and some of the those things, I don't know. I mean,
Well,
plastic's kind of a problem in the world because it never breaks down, so
funnily enough, though, rayon, of all things, surprisingly, is considered biodegradable. So, in my industry, when we make things like facial wipes, when facial wipes are made of what's called viscose, that's rayon. And the way that that is made and spun, it is considered biodegradable. Now, your definition of biodegradable may vary from another, and it may take 30 years to degrade. But that said, it will break down eventually. So
Yeah.
will cotton, because, things like toilet paper will also break down. So a lot of it depends on how it's made and how it's spun and all of those things. Wool, as long as you can keep insects away from it, will also last for, pretty much forever. But wool, I would be afraid of, bugs and things getting to it. So,
Yeah.
yeah. So I don't really worry about it. But I think everybody, that's one of those things that people have very strong opinions about. And I'd be curious to know if anybody had any real sort of scientific data. Like I have it, this would be really fun. So there, well, maybe it's only fun for me. That's entirely possible.
I'm going with that.
There's an instrument, a scientific
Now I'm
testing.
really going with that.
So bear with me. It's called an instron, and what it is if you can imagine, it doesn't look anything like this, but this is the best way I can describe it. Imagine if you are holding threads. Imagine you take six strands of DMC, right? And you hold each hand in one hand, each end in one hand, and you have the back of a chair in front of you, and you stretch the fibers over the back of the chair, and then you just run it back and forth over the chair, like one hand to the other, basically stressing it over that back of the chair to cause stress to the fibers. So imagine doing that, right? And it, like you would do that to sort of flatten something out,
Right.
right? So you're stretching it. So in scientific testing labs for hair products, there's an instrument called an instron, and it does that, except with less chairs and hands. So what it does is it has a piece in the middle that's made out of metal, and it's all, calibrated, very well. And it has a holder at each end, and it takes a calibrated tress of hair. And each tress is made, a very specific way, and it's all, actual human hair, and the hair is treated with whatever product it is that you're testing. And then it's put across this piece of metal, and then it's pulled back and forth over that to see how well a product will help you withstand the stresses of combing and brushing your hair. Because the idea of like conditioners and things like that is that it helps you prevent hair breakage. So the whole point of this instrument is to tell how strong hair is. So this is what I'm thinking. You could take that instrument, and if I had access to one that I could kind of use on the fly, I would love to do that test with a brand new skein of DMC and then a skein that was, 30 years old, and just run it on the instrument and see if one or the other could withstand more force, to see if there was any truth to the idea that old thread is less strong than new thread.
Well, get the Instron. I got the 30-year-old thread.
Well, that's the thing. I may have to call a friend, a friendly friend at a lab with an instron and see if I can borrow some time.
I
And
have,
hopefully I'm
I mean, I have
completely guilt-free.
30-year-old thread that has been stored in the same tackle box at room temperature in two different houses, never exposed to moisture or direct sunlight. as protected as I can keep it. So you get the Instron, I'll send you the stuff, and that'd be fun to see.
I may have to convince this person with bourbon, but I think it would be worth it because this may be the first, I don't know of any other test that's actually been done to put this debate to rest.
Is that official Instron currency, bourbon?
Bourbon? I don't know. I'll have to find out. I'll have to ask the lab director.
Well, I would be most curious. I would be most curious to send you, different, several of them. I mean, I think that would be fun. Yeah.
If he'd be willing to run the test for me, I'll drive to New Jersey and watch the test being done, and I will let you know. So if I can get them to lend me the instrument, I will let you know.
All right. Well, I certainly have the thread, multiple bobbins.
Yeah.
So
let me see what I can do. Like I said, this is an actual instrument that's calibrated and it actually costs a lot of money. So it may take a bit of convincing and convincing mostly that I'm not completely insane. To be able to do this. But if I'm able to do that, I will, I'll keep you posted.
Okay. All right. That would be fun. Yep. All right. All right. Well, all right. Let's end this thing. Okay. So what did we learn today? We learned Anasazi's song is a blast to stitch. We learned be careful on Pinterest. We learned that DMC now has cones of floss available for $36 for those who have not picked up 800 skeins of white.
Because why would you ever do that?
I have no idea why anyone would ever do that. We've learned that Krista Graymer is on the mend and we hope headed home. And I think, we've learned about Instron currency.
I really hope none of my colleagues are listening.
Yeah, Instron currency, yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, and we've also learned that Vonna Pfeiffer knows a couple of things about finishing needlework. We learned that.
I think we knew that already, though.
Did we? We had that established?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Sunday, Kim Young from Sassy Jack Stitchery. And you're going to go, we're going to talk about a shop again. Well, no, we're not. We didn't talk about the shop hardly at all. We had a tremendous conversation about this hobby and whether it's thriving or not and what dynamics are causing it to thrive. And we went on for an hour plus about just talking about the hobby. It was a fascinating conversation. And Kim is not your normal shop owner in that she comes from the business world and approaches it with a little different angle. So she analyzes things from a business perspective and has some insights that are not typical, I don't think, and are well-grounded. And it was a fascinating conversation. So I really encourage people to listen on Sunday to Kim Young and the discussion we had about this hobby in general. And probably could have gone on another half hour, but it was fun. So insightful, if I can say that.
Yeah. Yep. Kim's always fun.
She is. She is. And looking forward to visiting Sassy Jacks in August with the Nicola Parkman and that whole thing. Yes. And someone said, I don't know if I mentioned this, because she's in a building with a quilt shop and a bakery.
I've heard that.
Yes, but someone wrote that that doesn't matter because across the street is a chocolate shop. So there you have it.
So basically you're saying to make sure that you pack several sizes of clothing because you may need them on the way back?
I'm suggesting that might be an option, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm just checking. Yeah.
And I'm also trying to figure out if you have that location for your needlework shop, why are you looking to move down the road to a house?
Yes.
Bakery, quilting, and a chocolate shop within immediate walking distance. Come on, Kim, think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's see. I'm hoping for dark chocolate with orange in it.
Oh, yes.
That's my favorite. That's a good one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If they have those and they're good, then it's all over for me. Yep.
All right. Fair enough. Well, we'll see you in August.
All right. That's it. Thanks for listening. Kim Young Sunday. Christine and I back next Wednesday.
Yes, take care.